Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, September 2nd, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
British Ambassador to Zimbabwe, Catriona Laing, today held a private meeting with Deputy President Pelekezela Mpoko as the two countries seek to thaw frosty relations.
Relations between Harare and London cannot be said to be strained as such. Neither can they be said to be excellent. I would say they are lukewarm.
Some Harare residents have reacted angrily to yesterday's High Court decision allowing the City Council to disconnect water supplies over unpaid water bills.
Firstly, they must disconnect water from all these government institutions and all the ministers, including the president. They must go and disconnect water there. Because since 1980, I don't think Mugabe is paying anything. So why should they come to me and order the president who is suffering?
And President Mugabe swears in members of the Gender Commission as some women's rights advocates urge the commission to prioritize the rampant issue of child marriages and inheritance laws.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. The British ambassador to Zimbabwe, Catriona Laing, today held a private meeting with Deputy President Pelekezela Mpoko. Catriona presented her credentials to President Robert Mugabe at State House recently. Relations between Zimbabwe and the United Kingdom have for more than a decade now been frosty following Harare's decision to confiscate farms from former white commercial farmers, with London also charging President Robert Mugabe's government was allegedly rigging polls. Laing told Mr. Mugabe the two countries should work on improving their relations. A statement from the embassy says the UK is already undertaking important confidence-building measures, and if reciprocated on the Zimbabwe side, other important first steps that the UK has taken include trebling the number of chevening scholarships to be awarded to Zimbabweans in the next academic year, fostering cultural and education links through the British Council, and the continuation of UK's developmental support to Zimbabwe, valued at $117 million, being channeled through the Department for International Development to reach millions of Zimbabweans, particularly women and children. Mpoko confirmed the meeting to Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
Nothing more, nothing less. A normal status quo which is done by diplomats across the world, yes.
And how would you say relations between Zimbabwe and Britain are at the moment?
Yeah, the thing that is an ambassador, that means there's a relationship. When there's no relationship, there's no ambassador.
And that was Deputy President Pelekezela Mpoko. Blessing also reached out to political analyst Clifford Mashiri on his take on the meeting and Zimbabwe-UK relations.
Relations between Harare and London cannot be said to be strained as such. Neither can they be said to be excellent. I would say they are lukewarm. Zimbabwe is desperate for investment, but London is also very cautious about the safety of their investment in view of indigenization, which is not yet been clarified according to the communications we read.
But what can be done by Harare to normalize ties?
Well, Harare has a lot to do. It has, taken over a lot of white farms or farms which were once owned by white farmers and they didn't compensate them. Those are areas that need clarification and resolution, I believe. The outstanding compensation for white farmers, I want to believe also, is something that stands as a barrier which makes businessmen in Britain to be a bit cautious. They may be very keen to go and invest. But when they think about what happened to white farmers, they are likely to think twice.
But what about Harare's argument that London itself actually reneged on the position or the commitment to compensate the farmers?
That sounds quite interesting. Zimbabwe has a lot of political arguments to make against Britain. Most of them are quite unsustainable in view of the way Zimbabwe itself acted in relation to white-owned farms. Zimbabwe should have pursued these matters procedurally and properly rather than resorting to these strong-arm tactics.
That was political analyst Clifford Mashiri in London.
Some Harare residents have reacted angrily to yesterday's High Court decision allowing the Harare City Council to disconnect water supplies over unpaid water bills. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi went into the streets of Harare and filed this report.
Several Harare ratepayers are fuming over yesterday's court ruling allowing their municipality to disconnect water supplies from their homes if they fail to pay their water bills to the local authority. One such resident is Heathcliff inhabitant Zivanai Chirwa, who describes the court's decision as cruel.
So cruel for the judgment which has been done by the High Court. I think since water is no substitute, I don't know what do they want people to survive with. It's very, very cruel, especially the side of the courts.
David Mukunda, who lives in the Avenues area, says the ruling would mostly affect the majority of people who are failing to cope with life as the country's economic meltdown shows no signs of abating. He tells Studio 7 that most Harare residents cannot afford to pay the high bills that the local authority is charging them, adding that senior government officials have also been evading payment of their bills, with authorities taking no action against them.
How can they take my own right? Because it's a right to have water. So if they take my right, then I have to fight back. Rights are being demanded. So I have to demand that right. It's a right to have water. Then if someone takes my right, then I will fight back. Whoever comes to disconnect it, then I will fight back and up to the last man, even to Kaskwere. Firstly, they must disconnect water from all these government institutions. And all the ministers and all these thugs, including the president, they must go and disconnect water there. Because since 1980, I don't think Mugabe is paying anything. So why should they come to me and order the person who is suffering?
Westgate resident Cosette Chirinda weighed in, saying women and children are going to suffer the most if the council goes ahead with water disconnections, as they use more water every day than men.
It's going to worsen the situation in the homes, especially from a woman's perspective. I'm looking at them taking care of the kids, taking care of the whole family. This is going to be very hard on us as women. There's supposed to be a solution to this whole thing than cutting off water supplies in the homes.
Another Harare resident, Chakudzwa Dzumbun of Meboren, says the High Court decision allowing authorities to disconnect water supplies infringes on the constitutional rights of citizens to the precious liquid.
From my understanding, the council is saying that there are quite a number of institutions which own them a lot of money due to water debts and stuff. And in suburbs like Mabvuku and Tafara, those guys do not have running water for years now. So why don't the council first provide water to such suburbs at first before they can cut supplies from other places and stuff? Because water is not something you're supposed to buy. It's a basic commodity. It's my right. That's according to the constitution. So it's not supposed to be cut off.
Chirinda adds that the water disconnections may result in the resurfacing of waterborne diseases such as cholera that have killed many people in the past.
Personally, as a woman, I don't take it lightly at all that the city council has the liberty to do that, considering the fact that economically things are very hard in this country. So they should first find ways to fix the economy before they do that.
Several residents that spoke to Studio 7 said they were failing to pay their bills because of the prevailing harsh economic conditions, with some of them complaining that the city council's billing system is also defective. Efforts to get a comment from city council spokesperson Michael Chideme were fruitless at the time of going to air. But city mayor Bernard Manyenyeni is on record saying consumers should pay their water bills to enable the municipality to provide clean and safe drinking water in their homes. Council argues that it requires money to purchase water treatment chemicals and to service its water treatment plant, as well as repairing old water pipes. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
President Robert Mugabe today saw in members of the Gender Commission as some women's rights advocates urged the commission to prioritize the rampant issue of child marriages and inheritance laws. The nine commissioners are Chairperson Margaret Sangarewe Mukahanana, Nyepudzai Nyangulu, Sibongile Mauye, Naomi Chimbetete, Opet Machalaga, Victor Nkiwane, Paul Kadzima, Peter Maonera, Chief Chikwidzo, and Tsungirai Wungwe. Mr. Mugabe also saw in former MDC Ncube Organizing Secretary Kubani Moyo and Emmanuel Mugabe as members of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission. Lawmakers and women's rights activist Priscilla Misiaira Mbwimushonga tells Studio 7's Ntungameli Nkomo the Gender Commission must get straight to work as there are several important issues awaiting its attention.
The most important thing that we are looking at the Gender Commission is that it begins to look at the alignment of the laws that affect women in this country and see whether those laws can be aligned to the new constitution. You know that just a few weeks or months ago, one of the issues was the issue of the age of consent for girls. We know that the constitution is very clear around issues of children's rights, very clear around the protection of children from sexual abuse. So one hopes that they will quickly deal with those things that are urgent and those things that are critical. The issues around the inheritance laws, marriage laws that need to be reviewed and looked at.
What should be done to make sure that this commission is fully operational?
Sometimes I think it's about priorities. And the issue around the Gender Commission is to begin to understand that the majority of our population is actually women. And to understand that we know that when you invest in a woman, you have invested in a complete family, you have invested in a nation. So there should be that appreciation to say, if this country is going to move forward in a serious manner, we need to be able to deal with the issues that affect women.
And that was lawmaker and women's rights activist Priscilla Misiaira Mbwimushonga on the line with reporter Ntungameli Nkomo in Harare.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 meter wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
the Diaspora Forum with Gibbs Dube.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Russia today said it would respond in kind to new U.S. sanctions imposed on the country over the Ukraine crisis.
And a former Congolese rebel leader known as the Terminator has pleaded not guilty to charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity.
At least 2,000 people are stranded at the main international train station in Budapest, Hungary, after authorities abruptly stopped allowing migrants to travel to Germany and Austria without a visa from the European Union. Hundreds of undocumented Zimbabweans in various countries, especially South Africa, die every day, and relatives of the deceased find it difficult to process the necessary documents to repatriate their remains home for burial. Some operators of funeral parlors in Johannesburg say at times it's difficult to repatriate the remains as it takes a lot of time to obtain the needed documents from Zimbabwe and the country's embassy in South Africa. On average, the palace say they handle between 3 and 5 bodies of Zimbabweans who die in South Africa per week, and in some cases it's too complicated when some of the deaths are related to criminal activities. We caught up with one of the operators, Mandla Sibiya, who tells Studio 7 Skips Dube failure to provide the necessary documents for deceased people can result in serious delays in repatriating bodies of Zimbabweans.
When dealing with cross-borders, we've got a lot of Zimbabweans who come in from Zimbabwe without documentation. Some guys are even born there without a birth certificate. So what we do is we liaise with the Zimbabwean consulate, who also liaise with the Zimbabwe Register to confirm that the person that has died without documents is a really Zimbabwean, because it can happen that a South African dies or a Nigerian dies, then people take him to Zimbabwe, maybe for various reasons, rituals or whatever. So now for the Zimbabwean government to accept the body into Zimbabwe, it has to be verified. So we take the body from the mortuary where it died from, then we take it to our own mortuary. We do a death certificate. After doing a death certificate, the family has to supply us with an affidavit from a next of kin, an affidavit from the chief, or a letter, even if it's not an affidavit, from the school that he attended in Zimbabwe.
And then what happens after doing that?
We take those details to the Zimbabwe consulate, then they contact the Registrar General. The Registrar General, in turn, sends personnel to Zimbabwe, where there's that address of the deceased relatives in Zimbabwe, or to the chief or to the crown head to verify, do you know so-and-so? Where is he? They would say, no, so-and-so is in South Africa, but he has died in South Africa, and we are trying to repatriate the body into Zimbabwe. Then that's when they will verify that, oh, okay, this is it. They go to the school as well. They do the same thing. Then they give us a permit to say the body can now be released to Zimbabwe. Then we do the other documentation. Then we transport the body.
So now, all this kind of procedure, how long does it take?
It depends on the workload that the Zimbabwe consulate has and the Registrar General. How easy is it to contact, to get hold of them, and how easy also to get the police officer or the immigration officer who will go and contact the crawl head and the family that side.
Have you ever encountered some problems, very serious challenges?
I had one encounter whereby the family didn't want to adhere to what I'm saying, to listen, to give what I want. So it had to take them time, and they wanted things to be done their own way until to the last end, where they realized that they were doing the wrong thing. But with so far, with the other clients that I've dealt with, I haven't had a problem.
So how many clients do you handle, let's say, per month or per week? You know, and how many Zimbabweans are we talking about here?
Okay, mostly we're dealing with Zimbabweans. The rate will be more of Zimbabweans. Let's say plus minus 5 bodies per week, which gives us about, as I'm located also in the township, it gives me about 3 Zimbabweans at least, and then 2 or 3 locals.
So now, at the end of the day, do you think that the work that you are doing is providing a good service to Zimbabweans?
Really doing a lot, especially when it comes to when people that don't have documentation, we've helped them a lot.
Now, talking about charges, how do you charge, you know, and how do you call in the police if it is a criminal matter?
It is a criminal matter. We don't take the body at all. Let's say somebody dies at home. When we get there, we find that maybe he was stabbed. We find that maybe there are signs that somebody was trying to maybe to suffocate him. We liaise first with the family, then we call the police, they take the body to the forensic department, then from there, that's when we take the body, because the inquest has been opened already.
That was Mandla Sibiya, a director of Lala Kahle Funeral Services, speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Massive job cuts that have seen more than 30,000 people losing their jobs in the past month have had a terrible effect on family life of people living in Zimbabwe. Our reporter Michael Cariati tells us more about the situation on the ground.
Most of those who were offloaded are stuck between a rock and a hard surface, as they do not have anywhere to start from, with zero employment opportunities as investors continue to shun Zimbabwe. Marriages have been affected, with some reporting the breakdown of some marriages as families struggle to make ends meet. Some husbands have admitted they've not yet told their wives of their misfortune and have been struggling to find ways to convey the sad news. Others have taken their own lives, while some have been admitted in hospitals on grounds of mental instability or high blood pressure. Alexander Muza speaks of a sad episode in which one of his neighbors committed suicide after losing his job.
As it said, there is this guy who stayed close to us. He took red poison. Only came to know that he lost his job through the people around he left behind. I said, my friend, he passed away recently.
Naboth Makoche says he thought of killing himself after losing his job, but realized that this was not the solution.
You know, when you wake up one day and you find yourself jobless and with no life survival plan, life becomes so hopeless. And this is when I had thought of committing suicide, because I had no real any other survival plans, but I'm managing to cope up now.
The Secretary General of the National Education Union of Zimbabwe, Matthias Guchutu, says even Zimbabweans who are gainfully employed are struggling to make ends meet with their meager earnings. Worse, he adds, that those workers who have been laid off have been given very little or nothing to even start incoming generating projects.
Because if someone is getting three months notices pay, or whatever the new regime is coming up with, the new labor amendment bill is coming up with, I don't see that person coming up with a company, or even going to the rural area to get into farming. That money won't be enough.
With schools only a week away from opening for the third and final term of the year, many are grappling with the shattering reality that there is no money to pay for fees and nowhere else to turn to and get it. Some have their children at expensive private schools. Morgan Mshipe says he's wondering where he will get the $480 needed each for his twin children, as his company used to pay his fees.
I don't know where I will get the school fees. I will have to transfer the kid to my rural area.
He received a one-month salary of $900, which he says should cover his expenses at home until he finds a new gig, a highly unlikely thing in the current socio-economic climate. Mushipe says, sadly, he cannot enter into a fees arrangements with the school his twin children attend, as there is no guarantee that he will be paid outstanding allowances after leaving his place of employment. Even the loan sharks are skeptical of lending such people money, as they can't guarantee the money and interest would be returned. Matthew Mzamindo is a registered loan shark. He says he's only prepared to lend money to those who are gainfully employed.
I only give my money to people who guarantee it. Only those who have a salary or an income which is regular.
This is the situation in which most Zimbabweans find themselves in, as they cannot plan for the future after losing their jobs. Over 30,000 people lost their jobs as struggling employers took advantage of the country's labor law, which allowed them to seek employees on a three-month salary with no benefits for years served. Ironically, the law has been in existence since 1975, and no effort was made to change it to give equal voice to both employers and employees. Although the law has since been modified, those who have already lost their jobs may not benefit from the changes that have been made. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Thank you, Michael, for that very insightful story, which is part of our series on how people are surviving in Zimbabwe. Tomorrow, don't miss out on another great stories on life in Zimbabwe from our reporter, Patricia Mudadigwa.
And in sports news, Highlanders Football Club's Chief Executive Officer Ndumiso Gumede says the team's executive committee today resolved not to fire head coach Bongani Mafu pending further investigations of other factors, including mistrust and sabotage from within the team, which could have led to the Bulawayo Giants' recent dismal performances. Gumede, who dismissed plans to fire Mafu as media-driven speculation, says the team will explain its findings at a press conference in Bulawayo tomorrow afternoon. However, Peter Moy of the Harare chapter of Highlanders Supporters Club and a life member of the team tells reporter Tandigile Mhlanga the major problems lie within the team's management.
We are not shouldering the blame on coach Mafu as an individual. When we went for elections, the board saw it fit to disqualify NSC fund last minute. They were not supposed to do that. They should have done that long back so that we choose the person we feel is the right person to lead the Highlanders. And when is the coach is chosen to coach this club, the coach must be able to choose his own people. He must be able to choose his own lieutenants. He is supposed to work with the people he trusts, not to be given to say, this is going to be the assistant coach. This is the goalkeeper's coach, this is the team manager. That way it won't work, because those people will be sabotaging him. They will tell other players to sabotage the coach. And as Islanders, we are not going anywhere if we continue this kind of trend. It's so painful that a club like Islanders is on number 10, when the smallest teams are on top of us. It's an insult. This management should resign in shame.
How does all this negatively affect the performance of the team?
First and foremost, when they are in office, they must know that they are the servants of the people. They fired the Kelvin Kaindu. Kaindu did not fail. And the team was so divided. Others wanted the Mayere Kaindu. Others wanted the Mate. Today, the players want this one, and the others want the Mafu. The others that are sabotaging him. You can see the third goal that was scored. You can see that it is pure sabotage.
That was Peter Moy of the Harare chapter of Highlanders Supporters Club, who's also a life member of the team, on the line from Harare.
And stay tuned for Studio 7's Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will lead discussions about the water situation in Harare. To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 and we'll call you right back from our studios.
And now to recap today's top stories.
British Ambassador to Zimbabwe Catriola Leng today held a private meeting with Deputy President Phelekezela Mpoko as the two countries seek to thaw frosty relations.
Some Harare residents have reacted angrily to yesterday's High Court decision allowing the Harare City Council to disconnect water supplies over unpaid water bills.
And President Mugabe swears in members of the Gender Commission as some women's rights advocates urge the commission to prioritize the rampant issue of early child marriages and the inheritance laws.
That's our broadcast this evening.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night. And please do stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Standekile Mhlanga. Chris Gande, good night.